Hola, soy Cintia Reséndiz y te doy la más cordial bienvenida a Liderazgo Efectivo. Por favor, visita cambiatusresultados.com para más recursos. ¡Comenzamos! Hola, me alegra darte la más cordial bienvenida a Liderazgo Efectivo con un invitado de honor. Es John Breedon, es autor, escritor, también es director, actor, pero sobre todo es mi mentor. Y la verdad es que estoy muy feliz de que haya aceptado esta invitación para estar con nosotros hoy. La entrevista es en inglés, así es que si sabes inglés, quédate. Y si no sabes inglés, también quédate, porque a lo mejor aprendes algo. Estoy a punto de presentárselos. Y lo que voy a hacer, quería dar una breve introducción en inglés. Es mi mentor, tiene varios cursos, tiene varios libros, obviamente, y de lo que vamos a hablar hoy es de su nuevo curso. Así es que, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Hi, I want to give you the warmest welcome to this episode, special episode because it is in English, and we will have John Breedon. He's an actor, a performer, and also a director, and he has many courses, and most of all, he is my mentor. So I will speak with him about how his work has worked for me, how his work has helped me, and maybe you can find something interesting, or maybe you would like to work with him. I totally recommend him. I have done major breakthroughs after working with him. So for sure, it's great to have him here. Hi, John. Thank you very much. Hola. Amazing. That was the first thing I love about you. Most of the people I speak with in English would be, hi, hello, and all of the sudden, you will just like, hola, and he was just like, yeah, he speaks Spanish, and he said,
yeah, but then you see, I'm lying to you, because I go, hola, and you go, he speaks Spanish, and then I say, that's the only Spanish word I have.
I know.
I'm sorry, but it seems polite, at least, if I'm not polite enough to learn how to speak Spanish, at least I can say hello, really. I mean, you've been polite enough to learn English. I've been so rude, I've never bothered to learn Spanish. So the least I can do is say, hola.
But the thing is that you really hit the note and the sound. It's just like, hola.
You know, the funny thing, I've worked in Greece a lot. Uh-huh. And I picked up, I mean, I was going to Greece for 10, 15 years, several times a year. And I'm terrible at languages. I never really picked up Greek. But I picked up just enough to say, oh, thello mia salata, or thello in a sandwich, or something. But my accent was great. I'd say one sentence, people say, oh, you speak Greek. I'd go, no. They go, but you sound like a native. So, hola. I'm really good at that. The rest of it is terrible. Terrible.
I know. But as you said, it's polite. And for sure, I think the world needs that politeness.
Ain't that the truth?
Yes. I'm very happy on having you here. You're my first guest, so that's big for me in a podcast, in this podcast, because I have all the podcasts in English. But this one is for leadership, and I really wanted to bring you here because you have been a very good friend and a mentor to me. So I want others to know that's important to seek for someone that can help you. I know that now it's not that hard to think that you may need help with something. So I wanted to let my audience know that it's not that I'm myself and I am solving the world alone. No? So it's always good not only to say, this is why I'm here now, and this is how I move towards my own journey. But also go there and find someone. No, this part in which is important to find for someone or somebody or a group or.
Yeah, even then, just at that very first moment where you think, I would like some assistance in some way, even in that very first moment, you have a choice. well, you have several choices, but you have an important choice. Do you want someone who is going to teach you something, or do you want someone who is going to hold space while you learn things for yourself? Now, I would argue that the essence of a great leader is that she or he knows sometimes that they have to be in front saying, do it this way. But most of the time, they need to be holding and creating a space where the people who they are supposed to be leading can find things for themselves. So as a coach or a mentor, sometimes I say, yes, think about this, do this, here's some things to practice and whatever. Most of what I do is say, talk to me. Let me reflect back to you what you're saying. Let me challenge you. Let me provoke you so that you become your own teacher. You become your own leader. I create the space where you become your own leader. Even in that first moment where you reach out for assistance, ask yourself, am I looking to learn something, or am I looking to grow within myself?
And that's what I loved about you. I remember taking a lot of your courses. You have this Second Blossoming and Presence and many others. We will put a link on everything into the podcast page. So if you want to follow John, please go there. But I really loved your principles, your presence principles. The first one was hard for me. Don't be helpful. No, because we are used to help. We have a saying in Mexico. I mean, it may sound strange in English, but it's just like that. It's just like, if you are not serving, if you don't live to serve, you don't serve to live. So it's just like a hard thing for us. Just like, okay, I want to help. But when I understood that principle, and mostly when I saw you applying it, it was for me just like, wow, that's what I really need. And this is what I mean. We started, before we started the course, the Present Purpose and Pleasure course, we had a call just like this one. And you asked me what you would need from me. And I was just like, wow, he's not telling me what to do. That was kind of a first surprise. And then immediately I told you, I need you to be my straight jacket. For those who doesn't know what that is, it's the restricting thing that you use when you are in a mental health facility. And I really needed that in that moment. So just the way to be fairly honest with you, telling you that what I needed was somebody to hold me tight and don't let me become crazy, was enough for me. And it was just like, okay, he's saying, don't be helpful. And as you said, it's not about, okay, I know what you have to do, and what you have to do is A, B, C. And then because I have had so many experiences like that, and they haven't worked for me. So when you say,
of course they haven't worked for you. They weren't designed for you. They were designed for the teacher. They were designed to make it easy for the teacher to look like a hero.
Yeah.
I have the answer. You say you want me to be a straitjacket. It's easy for me to say, I can help you with that. The principle, don't be helpful, means instead of me saying, I will do that for you, it means me saying, what do you mean by that? Why do you think you need that? What is a straitjacket for you? What is the madness that you are trying to contain? Because when I ask those questions, you start to tell yourself what you need, not me telling you what you need. And so by resisting the desire to be helpful, I create the space for you to become your own teacher. Something I would often say is that if you do somebody's job for them, you stop them learning the lessons they're ready to learn. But you, now this is partly the translation Spanish to English. You said, if you don't serve, I don't say don't serve. I think we should serve. I think we should serve our families. We should serve ourselves. We should serve our communities. We should serve the environment. But one of the ways we serve each other is by not interfering and not trying to do other people's work for them. I want you, if we're collaborating, I want you to find how you do your job. And I want you to let me find how I do my job. And I want the leader, whoever that is, to keep an eye on both of us to make sure that the job gets done. I don't want to say, oh, let me help you with that. Let me do this. Because then I'm just annoying you. Or I'm distracting myself from doing my own work. Oh, my work's too difficult. So I'll offer to help you instead.
Yes.
It makes me feel good about myself. Aren't I a good person? Look, I helped her. I helped her do all this work. And then inside I'm going, she didn't ever bother to help me. I'm just horrible. I haven't finished my work. You know, I get all bitter and twisted. Don't be helpful means allow other people the space to do their work, to find their way of doing things, to learn the lessons they're ready to learn. Respect people enough to assume that even if they do things differently to you, they'll find their own way of doing it. If they don't, they'll learn a lesson.
Yes. But also there, I found two lessons. The first one, it was so relieving to really tell another human being that I was overwhelmed, that I was near the breakdown, just like letting myself being honest just started a connection with myself. Just like, it's a relief.
What you say there is so important. Giving yourself permission to be honest begins to heal broken connections. You're constantly lying to yourself. You're pretending everything's fine. You are breaking the most important connections of all, which is your connection with yourself. Just be honest. And again, part of my job as a coach is to create a space of unconditional acceptance where I can say, here, even if nowhere else, here, you can be honest.
Yes.
And yes, you don't even have to tell me what you're thinking. It's not my business. Just be honest to yourself here, because, and another of the principles, because right here, right now, you're good enough.
Yeah.
You don't have to lie. You don't have to lie to yourself. You're fine. From that place of self-acceptance, we can start the process of growing, but you can't grow from not accepting yourself. That's like trying to grow from who you're not.
Yes, yes. And the second lesson was that one. Have no opinion, no? Because we're always there just like, but what if he thinks this? And what if, and I was just like, okay, if one of the principles is have no opinion, and as you said, you are right here, right now, you're enough, you're good enough. It's just like getting yourself validated. I know it's not the main objective, but as a person that's approaching your job, it's just like, yeah, I can breathe here, even if I thought before I couldn't, you know. And that's the part I want at least my audience to know, that there's a place and there is a person that can do that, and maybe that's what we all need, no? Mm-hmm. Just like, what's happening to ourselves that we're keeping lying to ourselves and not moving forward because we think that that's the way it has to be.
And you, do you know where that place is where you can breathe and where you can really be yourself? Do you know where that is?
Yourself, yeah.
It's here. It's now. It's the present moment.
Yeah.
The reason I say don't have opinions is that if you are having opinions about what is happening now, you are looking at the present moment through your experience of the past. You're saying, oh, my opinion based on what I know already. So we have a conversation, and instead of listening and connecting with you and going, oh, I never liked people who did this, or she's saying this, she thinks that, I'm not connecting with you.
Yes.
There is a good time for opinions. There's a time for opinions. It's after something has finished, you reflect on it. So you're a leader, you're in business, say, and you've got a, you know, you've have to have a meeting with some staff because things aren't working very well. And you have in your head an analysis of the problems and a vision of how things need to change. This is your job. All of that's great. But while you are having the meeting, try not to jump to opinions, to jump to conclusions. Instead, listen. Listen to what your colleagues are saying. Listen to what they're not saying. Listen to or look at how their bodies are reacting as they speak. Do they look comfortable in what they're saying or do they not? Look at whether or not they are breathing easily. Do they smile? Try to be present with the whole thing so you get the whole experience of having that conversation. No time for opinions. Get rid of those. And then afterwards, you'll have some really good information to base opinions on. You'll go, she said this, but, you know, clearly she was saying that because she knew it was what I wanted to hear. Because actually she was uncomfortable. She didn't look like she believed what she was saying. Or when she said that, I saw somebody else roll her eyes. There's a problem between those people. You don't know any of that stuff if you're busy there going, yeah, I know what the problem is. I know what's going on here. Shut yourself up and open yourself to the one place where you can discover anything, which is in the present moment. That's where we learn everything.
And there you can have your book, because your book, How to Teach Performance, was also amazing for me. I used to think a lot and learn, and I was just in this race, crazy race of knowing, but it was just like if I couldn't do anything with that. To be fairly honest, I was just like, yeah, I know. And then I don't know. No, this part in which I have the knowledge, but it, somehow I couldn't pass through and then apply it. So your this way on the book in which you say, okay, experience, reflect. I know it's analysis, whatever, all the stages there. But if you're interested in that part, buy his book.
One of my many books, I have to say.
Yes, I know.
I've got six of them out there now, so I think. But it's interesting. I remember years ago, actually, when I published my first book, which was a more academic book about ensemble performance, what's happening in ensemble. And we did a launch for it in Los Angeles. I went over, flew over to America. We had a 2 or 3 day sort of seminar conference, lots of artists, some academics all came together in a studio in Los Angeles. And there was a very senior woman there called Sharon Carnicky, an academic, who had written a lot about Stanislavski, because I was, of course, writing about theatre. And Sharon Carnicky is absolutely brilliant academic. I loved her work and I loved her book. And she was running a little workshop, this being Hollywood, of course. It was in LA. It was right in Hollywood. Loads of actors are out. Oh, my God, we're going to work on Stanislavski. It's so exciting. And I said, Sharon, can I come to your workshop? You know, I'd really like to see what you're doing. And she goes, yeah, cool. I came along. And Sharon said something so important at the start of the workshop. She said, unlike most theatre academics, my PhD is in Russian, which means that I have read everything that Stanislavski wrote. Most theatre academics, of course, don't speak Russian. They read translations. She said, I've read almost everything that Stanislavski wrote.
Wow.
But my job now is to forget all of it the moment I walk through this door and to serve the actor. Just to connect with the actor. And I think that's brilliant. As a teacher or as somebody who is guiding an organization, know as much as you can, get as much information and knowledge as you can, read, find things out. But when you go into a situation where you must connect, forget it all and connect. Be present and get and give. So the heart of the book, How to Teach Performance, is, you know your why, know your structures, know your skills. But more than anything, be able to create a space where you can connect with your students and you can train your students to connect with you. That's 80% of the education process, creating a place where there can be genuine connection between student and teacher. And then once that's there, knowledge passes in both directions. You learn from your students and your students learn from you. Without the connection, there's no good learning happening. So the heart of How to Teach Performance is be present, connect.
Yes. And I really needed to create a space, as you said. And I remember myself, and I think I told you and the group, because this, when I took this course, it was in a group. And I would tell them, I will go to my bed and lie under the the dobbit.
The duvet, yeah.
The duvet, yes, and stay there for a while. I mean, I won't be sleeping, but I couldn't get myself this space, not even with meditation, not even with sports or training or whatever. I really needed physical space just to start reflecting. For me, it was the hardest part because I wasn't used to do that. So yeah, I will go with my notebook after our calls, put the notebook there, and then on the bed, just like, okay, I'm here, I'm giving it space. And of course, the first few days, it was just like, I feel like a stupid here down the bed, not doing anything. But then it started to put myself on a different state because I was there and I was present. And I was, yeah, just like a little kid when you play castle or whatever. When you put yourself in that space and you can start imagining. And what I discovered is that I wasn't reflecting on anything. So I couldn't really access to the knowledge, and less than that, I couldn't make anything with it. So as I started reflecting, I realized that I have been in this rat race running for whatever I wanted, not knowing what I really wanted. So yes, I think it's coming back to the present, and even when you think that you cannot include that on your life because we are busy and we don't have time and whatever, I think it's super important to give yourself the opportunity to experiment, as you said, so, in this book.
Experiment. Just in that story that you're telling of how, as we went through the purpose, presence, pleasure sequence, you would go to hide in your bed and use that as a space. I want to just, let me just connect with three things in what you said, because they're really important. The first one is this. On our initial call, you said you wanted a straitjacket.
Yeah.
What is a straitjacket? A straitjacket is a garment, a piece of clothing that stops you rushing around all over the place and keeps you safe. Your duvet was a straitjacket. I didn't need to tell you how to create a straitjacket.
Totally.
You found how to create your own straitjacket. In other words, a place which stopped you suddenly go, oh, I must just check Facebook. I must just do the cooking. I must do this. Stop you doing all that and put you in a place of stillness. So you found the solution to your problem. I didn't find a solution to your problem. I allowed the space for you to find the solution to your own problem, because you know the solutions to your problems a great deal better than I do. So that's the first thing. The second thing, you talk about feeling we don't, you know, we can't make space or whatever. Whatever you are trying to achieve, one of the first questions you must ask yourself is, how do I create the space, the physical space, and more importantly, the attentional space to enable this to happen? So we, you know, what we do every day is about creating spaces. You create a space with your children, you create a space with your partner, you create a space when you go and you chat to somebody in the shop, you create a space when you are teaching someone or in the gym with them or whatever. The question is, what sort of space are you creating? If you don't make a different space for your relationship with children to the space you make for your relationship with your work colleagues, either you're not going to work very well or you're not going to connect with your children very well. We pay attention to the quality of the space we are creating for each interaction, including interactions with ourselves. When you are teaching, and I think this is similar to when I'm coaching, when I'm teaching or when I'm coaching, I am not really teaching and I am not really coaching. I am making space in which it is possible for people to learn. That's, I'm creating experiences,
yes,
from which people can learn. I am not, if I teach you a lesson, I am giving you information, and there's way too much information in the world already.
Yeah.
If I create an experience from which you can learn, I've changed your life, or rather, I've enabled you to change your own life. So if, yeah, I'm working with students, I set up an exercise for them and they have an experience from which they can learn. If I'm running a company, because I've, you know, run a theatre company for 15 years and I need something to happen, I need to create the space in which it can happen. So we are always asking ourselves, or we should always be asking ourselves, what is the quality of attention that I am trying to create now to create the sort of experience that will help me meet my objectives? Now, sometimes you go, I don't have time for it. I'm too busy. I've got to achieve this. I am certain of not many things in life, but I'm certain of this. The more you slow down and pay attention to the details, give yourself a bit of reflection time, a bit of thinking time, give someone else time to talk or to experience something, the more you slow down, the quicker you will achieve your objectives. I'm absolutely certain about that. I used to find when I was directing a theatre piece or a dance, mm-hmm, piece, that if I had 3 weeks to create a piece of work, if I tried to create that piece of work in 3 weeks, I would struggle. But if I said, well, we're going to spend half of each day just doing training, it would be easy. Half the rehearsal time, 4 times the outcomes.
Okay.
Because you slow down. There's a famous director, Simon McBurney, who once said, with properly trained actors learning to play together, he can create a 1-hour show in 1 hour.
Wow.
The work you spend creating space for connection, for presence, for listening, for respecting, for laughing, that space repays you 1,000 times. I bet you got further in half an hour hiding under your duvet than you would have done sitting with a piece of paper trying to write a list of things you ought to do.
But don't tell anyone.
I promise. This will never go out into the world.
I know. I hope. Yeah, the real thing is, and maybe that's only myself, and that was something that I needed to make peace with. I don't have any troubles, being honest. It really doesn't matter if it's with myself or with others. But I had this shame thing, this part in which, no, I'm totally, really, fully ashamed to telling someone that what I fear the most is becoming crazy. That was for me a big, big, big fear, no? So when I was able to tell you I may need you to be my straitjacket, it was just this, sharing this shameful moment with you. And as you said, it's part of the way you coach or the way you mentor or the way you teach. Creating that space in which I could be totally safe to say fully honest. Because it's just like if I had levels. I can be honest in this part or work or family or whatever. But then with the things that I fear the most or the things that I'm shameful of, it's just like, of course not. I'm not saying that out loud or to a stranger or to another person. Mm-hmm. And I think that part is very important.
Yeah, I agree very much for two reasons. First of all, shame is perhaps the most destructive of all human emotions, maybe. One of the most destructive things you can do to anyone else is make them feel ashamed. It's a terrible thing to do. If somebody has done something shameful, the most progressive and kindest thing you can do is reach out to them with compassion and hold them while they come to terms with their own behavior. I'm not saying you don't point things out. I'm not saying you don't say this was not okay. But if you force people into a position of shame, whether this is in your personal life or when you run a business, you simply destroy their ability to make brave choices. You turn them into someone broken. Now, some managers like to break their staff, but they're sure as hell not leaders. They are sure as hell not in any way leaders. They are just people using their position to cause pain to others. So that encounter with shame, I don't ever need to tell people that they need to feel ashamed or what they need to feel ashamed about. I just, again, ask questions until people come to recognize what they are ashamed about in themselves. And we all have stuff. I mean, I'm ashamed of plenty of stuff. As I recognize it, I can begin the process of changing it. But the other thing is that when you say, oh, I'm going to need a straitjacket, and you laugh and I laugh because it's a safe space, we can have a laugh, but you're doing the most important form of human learning. Humans learn by playing. That's how we learn. Most mammals do. We learn by playing. What does playing mean? Playing means doing things without having to fear major consequences. A play fight, you get to experience fighting, but you're not about to get smacked in the head by somebody who's really angry, you hope, and is going to try to damage you. You know, the little kid who's wrestling with his mum or dad or her mum or dad, they're exploring it, but they're not really expecting their mum suddenly to go all right, I'm going to apply all of my strength to try to break your arm. You know, playing is doing in a safe place where there are limited consequences. You play Monopoly, you can lose millions of pounds. There are no real consequences except going, I lost the game. Drama, dance, art, all of these are places where we play. You can say, I need a straitjacket, and we can laugh because there are no consequences to saying that. We can just go, yeah, you probably do need a straitjacket. And you might go, I think I'm a bit mad. And I might go, yeah, quite possibly. But we can laugh because there are no consequences, yeah. Because it's a safe, playful place.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it's not serious.
Totally. Yes.
It's learning, isn't it?
Please.
And then you go, oh, I need a straitjacket. Then you reflect on it and go, what does that mean? And you go, well, actually, it talks about my biggest fear is being crazy. It talks about me going and lying under the duvet to create a safe, contained place where I can do my reflection. All of that comes from the fact that you can say that because you are safe to play it because there are no consequences. It's not like I'm likely to say, you need a straitjacket. I'm going to phone the police and get you taken away to hospital. You know? It's a joke. And like most jokes, it's about something serious. It's a game. It's about something serious. We play because it's too serious. What we're doing here, we're trying to become the best person we can, the best citizen, the best mother, the best father, the best manager, the best leader, the best visionary we can each be. That's serious stuff. That's why we've got to not take it very seriously. It's way too serious to take seriously.
Yes.
You know, yes. We've got to play, we've got to laugh, because that's how humans grow and learn.
That's amazing. I really think that we may need some kind of recalling everything that you have already said, because I think it's full of golden nuggets right now. And I don't want to lose anything. So it's my time to reflect on them. That's why. Just like speaking about them again. So first we talk about how attention can get us to a better place, how being honest is truly important for ourselves. Mm-hmm. If I'm missing something, please.
Oh, you're doing amazingly. I've got no idea what we've talked about. I'm just listening and responding. I'll have to go back and watch the whole thing to remember what we talked about. I'm just following you. You keep saying interesting things, and I go, yeah, that's great, and that's great. I've got no idea what we talked about 10 minutes ago.
No, we are near the hour already. Well, 45 minutes or so. So just because I'm... That's something that I learned from you. This part in which I need to stop myself and create this space for myself and then kind of recall everything that I have experienced. Because as you said, this is the important part, experiencing it. So I like very much when you said, and I'm not in order because that'll be kind of freak, but yes. This part in which you said, we learn by playing. And the real thing about playing is because you won't have the consequences. But even when you're playing, things are serious. Because that was right. I mean, I was really ashamed of that. But yes, having someone to speak to and laughing with and making a joke about it, it takes a lot of the pressure out of it. Just like, I was really thinking that when I said that, any other person would say, oh, now you're going to be crazy. Oh, wow. This part in which you will censure yourself, censorship. You censorship just like, okay, you're doing bad or you're not good enough or whatever thought came to my own mind.
So just let me interrupt there a moment, because again, please. you say something so important there. In that moment where you say, I need a straitjacket, although many times during Purpose, Presence and Pleasure, the six-week course you did with me, the group course, where I'm asking you to do two things at once. This is at the heart of a lot of my coaching. I'm asking you to take yourself less seriously, and I am asking you to take yourself more seriously.
Totally.
Both at the same time. I'll say, what you're saying, let's laugh about it, but let's also absolutely accept that what you're saying really matters, really matters.
Yes.
You really matter. You're really important. You're important to me because you're my client. If you're my client, you're important to me. But, you know, you're much more important to yourself. You should take yourself incredibly seriously, but also while you're at it, take yourself much less seriously. We're just here to have a laugh. The middle line of sort of taking yourself a bit seriously, but, you know, you don't want to laugh at yourself because, you know, you're a bit ashamed, but you don't want to take yourself too seriously because you might seem arrogant. That's useless.
Yes.
Be really focused on yourself. You matter. Also, learn to laugh at yourself, because very few things in life are as serious as we think they are. And so often my work as a coach, either in a group program like Purpose, Presence, and Pleasure, or on individual coaching, often my work is to say, those bits that you're taking too seriously, let's laugh at those. But those bits of yourself that you are dismissing, or you are somehow treating as if they're a bit embarrassing, or, you know, you don't want to boast about them, boast. You know, let's talk about what makes you brilliant, but also let's laugh while we do it. So I want to move to extremes. Yes. I want you to be really, really serious and really not at all serious at the same time. In the tension between those two things, we find a truth.
Yes, and I found mine there.
Yeah, I remember you, because in the, you know, as you know, in the Presence, Pleasure, I can never get the name of the program, right? Purpose, Presence, Pleasure program. At the end of it.
Poor Pete.
Yeah, I know. At the end of it, that I do a one-on-one call.
Yes.
With each person. We do a one-on-one call at the beginning and one-on-one call at the end. And I remember clearly your one-on-one call at the end, how you had transformed from the one at the beginning. And the image to me was that you had come into focus. At the beginning, you were sort of, and at the end, you were going, I think I need to do this. I think my next step, I'm going to do this. And you weren't being serious, and you weren't not being serious. You were actually just being present with yourself. You were being you. It was really fantastic and very, very powerful.
Yes. Yes, I know. No, and it really changed my life. As you said, I'm just like that. I don't take myself very seriously. But also that was a problem, because I wasn't taking myself seriously. Yeah. You know, it was just like, yeah. And yes, not knowing really what to take seriously and what not. But yes, it was a
and I would suggest I would suggest that we I would suggest we take everything seriously and everything lightly of the same, that everything you do, every time, you know, little moment thought you go, it's worth thinking, it had an important thought.
Yeah.
And it's also worth going, yeah, okay, I've just got really upset about something again. Get over yourself. It's yeah,
again,
it's
not, again, again.
Again, I've got myself stressed again. So I'm glad it was such a strong experience for you, though. I'm thinking I'm going to run that program again. I'm starting sometime this autumn. I can't quite decide the dates yet, because I'm waiting for someone else who wants to collaborate with me to decide her dates. But once I know when I've got free, I'm going to run that program again, because I've spoken to everybody who did it, the six of you who did it. Yeah. And it was very powerful. Another person said it was the most powerful program she had done. And I know another person on there who's really turned his life around, or not turned his life around, but changed significantly, saying that the program was a real big part of that. So it feels very strong. I'm looking forward to running.
I like it very much. And I think now is time to speak about the other things that you're planning. So you have presence, purpose, and pleasure program.
No, other way. Purpose, presence, and pleasure. Don't confuse me, Cynthia. Don't confuse me. It starts with purpose. Everything starts with purpose. It's purpose, presence, and pleasure. So that will happen later in the autumn. Basically, if anyone's interested in that, the easiest thing to do is to go to my website and sign up with my mailing list, because as soon as I announce the dates, I will tell my mailing list, and I always give people on my mailing list a small discount on the cost of things as well, usually 10% discount or something. So
please now tell us your website.
So my website is johnbritton.co, just that, www.johnbritton.co. So that'll happen later in the autumn. This autumn, I'm trying something new, which I'm very interested in. I'm going to run 6 workshops only for men. I've never done things by gender before. But it feels to me at the moment that there is a real need for space for men and gay men, straight men, trans men. I don't mind anyone who is living their life as a man to talk about the big stuff. You know, how do we live? I mean, I've had too many friends who have not made it. You know, they've ended up in suicide. I've had too many friends who've done that. The suicide for men rate for men in Britain is 2.5, 3.5 something times larger than the suicide rate for women.
Wow.
I was talking to a friend in Canada a couple of days ago, saying that in his province, several male suicides every day.
Wow.
Every day. So it's not, I don't want, I'm not doing, I'm not, these workshops are not about suicide.
No, I get it,
I want to have a bigger conversation about feeling difficult things, how we connect with each other, being vulnerable. Just conversations like we would have had in the PPP group, but just creating a space where for some people, for some men, it will be easy to do it only in a single gender place. Other men, it won't bother, but. So I'm running 6 workshops just for men where we're going to look at, you know, anxiety, and we're going to look at, you know, ambition, and we're going to look at how to be a role model and how to mentor other younger men and things like that. So I'm doing that. That starts in a few weeks, actually. I'm looking forward to that. And then the other thing I'm doing at the moment is individual coaching. I have several clients at the moment. I don't take on very many coaching clients because I like to be able to focus a lot on the people I'm working with. And if you have too many people, you can't work in detail with them. So yeah, this autumn, it's PPP coming up later in the autumn, the men's group, which is called Interconnection, and my individual coaching. And then there are 2 or 3 big projects which I am currently discussing and I'm very excited about. But I'm not ready to announce those yet.
No, it's okay.
They depend on other people and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. But there's one particularly very big project which I'm very excited about. But that's about a month away from being able to announce that.
And you have books, and you have website, courses.
I've got a book on presence. I've got a book on how to teach performance. I've got courses, the second flowering course. I've got courses on how to teach performance. I've got so much stuff. The best thing to do is go to my website. I'd love to connect with people, with your audience. Go to my website, sign up for my mailing list, take a look around on the website, and if you want to work with me, just drop me an email. Do it through the website and we'll have a chat. You know, I'm here. I will never help you, but I am here to serve.
Yes, I know.
And we go back to that distinction. You know, my job is to try to help people or to create space where people can become the best versions of themselves, fearless, creatively free, focused, creating fantastic communities, running brilliant companies, all of this stuff based on compassion and connection and decency and authenticity and conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, if that's you, then be in touch and let's find ways to work together. I really mean that. I know.
That's why you're here. That's why you're here. I don't know if you have any other thing that you would like to say before we say goodbye.
I suppose I always want to say this to people, that we live in a world of quick fixes, easy answers. We live in a world where people like to band together against other people. You know, you cancel people or you get outraged by people, or this group of people hate that group of people. And we live in a world where humans are doing so much damage.
Yes.
I mean, my heart broken this week at the news of all the king penguins dying down in Antarctica and people saying basically they're likely to be extinct in the next 20 or 30 years. We need, all of us, gently to learn to live better. We need to live better with ourselves. We need to live better with each other. We've got to earn a living. You know, I don't have money. I have to put food on the table. There's pressures, all of that. I get it. But things aren't going to get better for any of us unless we, each and every one of us, make the choice to do everything we can to make things better. Doesn't mean being a saint. We're all flawed. We've all got our dark sides. We've got our shadow sides. But we're also all amazing. People sometimes talk about, you know, ordinary people. Politicians talk about ordinary people. I'm sorry, that's bullshit. I've never met an ordinary person. I mean it. People, you know, yes. I've taught thousands of people around the world. I've never met an ordinary person. I've only met extraordinary people, yes, living in extraordinary places in a beautiful world. And if that's not enough, then we need to grow up. So the last thing I always would want to say, and I don't claim to be some visionary or whatever, but we can each of us do better.
Yes.
And we can do better by being kinder to ourselves and kinder to the world around us, people and the other people. And if you want me to be part of that journey for you, then that's what I do. But most of your listeners, of course, won't. But I do encourage us all in our own ways to do everything we can to be better.
Yes. Our best version, as you said before.
Yeah. In this beautiful world. I mean, it's a beautiful world.
Yes. This is. When I started this podcast, it started because I had a project, and it was called You Puzzle. And the main reason behind that is that we are all part of this big, big puzzle. We all as humans. But the real thing is that we don't know which one is our place. And we try ourselves to push and force ourselves to a place. And the real thing is that the only way that we can know which our place is to relate to others. Because in the way that you relate to others, you can start looking at yourself and knowing yourself enough to say, this is not my place, because I cannot fit in here. Not because there is something wrong with that, but this is not my place because somehow I don't fit. I will have to try to look where I really fit. But you cannot do that until you start knowing yourself and accepting yourself and being honest with yourself and stay present with yourself. And so I think it's a journey.
it's always a journey. And the destination, we, none of us want to rush to the destination, because the destination of life is the one that most of us are trying to avoid most of the time.
Yes. John, I really enjoy this conversation.
It's wonderful to talk with you again, Cynthia.
Thank you very much.
Let's catch up again in a few months.
Yes, of course. I'd like to have you again here.
Let's have a conversation, either as a podcast or let's just have a proper conversation.
I know. But I think it's also part of sharing knowledge. No?
Yeah.
For me, this part is so good that I couldn't keep it to myself. And I'm excited for you, for having these new projects and these new programs and this course that it's for men. And I'm jealous, but I'm not.
I'll do one only for people from Mexico. How does that sound?
That'd be great.
I've visited Mexico a few times. It's a country I love very much.
Yes, I know. And yes, maybe we can arrange something. If you want to come again.
Yes, that'll be great. It's lovely to talk with you.
Thank you very much, John. I will now finish this call and go to my bed and
do some thinking.
Some reflecting. No, yes, I think we have covered a lot of ground, and I really hope that this helps someone somewhere to find something that they're missing or looking for. I always end my episodes saying, if you have another way of doing things, what would you do different tomorrow? So I think now you have given us very much ideas to think about options and to do something different tomorrow. No? So thank you very much. See you soon.
Thank you, Cynthia. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Me despido. Muchas gracias por escuchar este episodio. Si quieres más recursos, visita cambiatusresultados.com. Si tuvieras opción, ¿qué harías distinto mañana?